Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com, worldwide. And my guest is indeed from my own home county of Mayo. Her name is Maura Mulligan, and she is a native of Cahir Achamore, which is indeed, it's in East Mayo, and it is not far from Knock, Kelchama, Ballyhonus, somewhere in that area there. But we have known Maura, and she's a well-known figure in the Irish community for many a long year. And Maura, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Adrian. It's delightful to be speaking with you again.
Maura, and likewise, but I wanted to, you give us a little bit of your own background and leaving Mayo, coming to New York, and your varied endeavors since then. I can preface that by, you know, by saying, friends, that my guest, Maura Mulligan, has served her time as a teacher in New York City, is an author of a book, indeed called The Call of the Lark, a dancing teacher, an Irish, a Gaeltacht, an Irish teacher of the Irish language, and most recently a playwright. We'll get onto that in a moment. Now, bring us back to Mayo and what got into you, as we say in Mayo, to head for the for the United States.
Yes, fado, long ago. It was 1958, Adrian, and I came by ship, the MV Britannic. People were coming by air at that time, but I remember my Uncle Pack, who sponsored me, asking me if I wanted to come by air or by ship. And I thought if I came by ship, it would take longer, and I wouldn't feel so lonesome because it would take a longer time to get here.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it did take, I don't know, was it a week or more? I can't remember very well, but it was a fairly long trip.
Well, you beat me by a year, actually, because I came in 1959. So coming here, you say your Uncle Peggy?
Pat Connolly.
He sponsored you here. So had you any idea in leaving Ireland, like what you might wind up doing here, or did that come to you after you got here?
I think it all came to me after I got here, though I had been hearing stories about the telephone company, and that was my first job. I worked for the New York Telephone Company as a long-distance operator for 4 years. And then you might say that I answered a higher call, and I joined the Franciscan novitiate in Peekskill, and I became a nun there for several years. And then when I left, I got a master's degree and started to work for the New York public school system. And now I'm retired.
And now you're retired.
Yes.
Well, you're retired, you know, from the New York City school system, but you're definitely not retired from some of your other endeavors. Your book, which is, it's close to 10 years ago.
Yes, exactly.
The Call of the Lark, and it's still, by the way, available, friends, on Amazon.com. Book was, how would you describe your own book, and what did it become what you set out for it to be?
Well, I think that it did. I wanted to express, I wanted to express what it was like as a new immigrant in the States, you know, the acculturation part of it. I think that had something to do with my entering the convent. It's not even if you're speaking English, as we were, you and I and others, it's a whole different place, America, from rural Ireland of the 40s and 50s. So it was for me at that time, it was the right thing to do, and I wanted to tell people that, you know, it's good to follow your heart, and you can always change your mind. You can have as many lives as you want as you go along. You have to just keep following where the spirit is leading you. So that's what I wanted to get across, and I think I did. People have been singing its praises for a while now, and
absolutely.
I'm delighted,
yeah.
delighted that it's still around.
Still around after
10 years, yeah.
Now, I want to ask you on your teaching Irish, what was your interest in not only teaching the Irish language, but in Irish dancing? Where did that come from?
Oh, the dancing? Well, I started to learn dancing when I was about 10 from Seamus Ford, who lived in Risk, not Claremorris.
Yeah.
And when I came here to the States, then I joined the McNiff School. And so dancing has always been a part of my life, you could say, except when I was in the convent, I had to give it up for a while, but I brought it back to life. And as soon as I left, I got a certificate from the Irish Dance Commission to teach Ceilidh dancing. So that's how all that started. And as far as the language goes, the Irish Arts Center invited me to teach classes there in the 80s. And I remember that only a small bit of Irish. I was saying, how can I teach if I only know a small bit of Irish? But I went back to Ireland and I spent a couple of months in Connemara. And then I went again and I went to Enniscorthy and Donegal and got a certificate to teach. So I felt more able, you might say, to do it. And so I've been doing it ever since.
And well, you have a great reputation actually in both the areas there. You mentioned the McNiff dancers. They mm-hmm. were not only were the McNiff dancers, much praised for their own style of teaching, but they were huge. They were
renowned
for their time.
Yes, they were the North American lead school when back then. Yeah, absolutely.
Now,
Cyril McNiff,
indeed. I want to ask you about your interest, because you do have, and you've had and brought to our attention over the last few years, the interest in St. Bridget. Mm-hmm. And who knew that when the Irish government would finally get around to having a national holiday, you know, for St. Bridget, that would also be the first time a woman was selected for to be commemorated on a national holiday. And tell us about that. This year is the first year. Tell us about that.
Well, it's exciting that it's happening, because, you know, she is the most celebrated Irish female saint. She's venerated in the Catholic, the Eastern Orthodox, and the Anglican Church. And, you know, she was the daughter of a noble father and a slave mother. And as most of your listeners will know, she was born in Dundalk, Ireland, around 450 AD. She was sold along with her mother to a Druid, and whom she later converted to Christianity. So I'm not sure of all the steps that were taken to, you know, by the Irish government to create this day for her, but I'm delighted that it happened. And I had been working on a play and doing scenes with the Irish-American writers and artists, you know, for the past four or 5 years. So when I heard about this, that she was going to be honored with a national holiday, I said, I have to bring this play forward. So I worked more on it, and I presented it to the Origin First Irish, and it's been accepted. It's been official selection of the Origin First Irish Festival. So,
which is ongoing, and it's a month-long indeed festival of Irish playwrights and Irish actors that, indeed, a novel idea, and it's one that takes place in various centers and various venues, primarily in the New York area. You know, it is it's something again that we're very, very proud of. Let me now, in creating and the play about St. Bridget. St. Bridget, if we go back to Mayo again, and to both of us growing up around the same time in Mayo, St. Bridget and Brejeog's Night was the eve of St. Bridget's feast day. What are your recollections about how that was celebrated, again, in your own neck of the woods?
Well, actually, in my neck of the woods, it had died out. I researched, when I was growing up, we didn't do anything. We knew that it was her feast day, but it seems that all that visiting and knocking on the door and the old custom, it wasn't happening. It wasn't happening where I lived. I'm just delighted that she is being brought back, and that
Was that overshadowed by maybe by Halloween? And again, it's peculiar in a way that some areas, like my own area of Attymass, only 20 some odd miles down the road from your area, the eve of St. Bridget's was almost a carbon copy of, you know, of Halloween and the same kind of celebrations. But Bridget, so you start with a play. And first of all, now tell us a little bit about St. Bridget before you get into the play.
A little bit about St. Bridget herself.
Yes.
From what I read, she was a very strong woman. She was ordained as a bishop. And some accounts say that the guy who ordained her was drunk.
Yes.
And other accounts say he couldn't have been drunk because she knew what she was doing and she was a wonderful leader, and therefore she should. In the old Irish church, there was equality in men with men and women. In the pagan religion, which came before Christianity, there was equality in the druidship of men and women. So, so Bridget was the leader. She founded an abbey for monks and for nuns. And she was the abbess in charge of everything. And you often see pictures of her holding a crozier, and that is the symbol of the bishop of the church.
Yeah. Now, how did she skip past the, you know, the ordination, the priesthood, and go straight to the top?
Well,
as
this
the bishop?
This was all before the Roman Church, of course.
Yeah.
This was the old Irish church. Yeah, before the Roman
Church. Yeah, and the Roman Church didn't learn.
The Roman Church didn't like any of that stuff.
No.
It created its own rules. Exactly. So that's kind of what the play is about, that she comes back to Earth on this special year, the feast, the year that she's being given a special honor by the Irish government.
Yes.
And she tries to deal with the situation of the current Catholic Church and tries to update it. So that's her mission when she comes back.
Boy, she'd get a doctorate in that if she gets through. But
yeah, exactly. Yes. She has her steps all laid out for her.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited about it. It's a one act play, and after the play, there's going to be a modern day Bridget connection with Susan McKeown, because she works with the youth down in the village.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Yes, she is.
She's
a beautiful singer, and she's singing some hymns in the play in Irish.
Yes.
So it's I'm looking forward to it myself, actually.
Well, absolutely, and we all are. Now, tell us a bit about, and this would be very strange to our listeners and to any of us, about a pompous U.S. bishop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
how far did you have to dig to find a pompous U.S. bishop?
I didn't have to dig far at all. They're well known, you know. There are a lot of them, you know, just like the government with the conservatives and the progressives.
Yeah.
there are progressive bishops who encourage Pope Francis' initiatives to bring about to reach the modern world.
Yeah.
But the conservatives are against it, and they don't want anything. They even carried out when he tried to ordain elderly married men for the area that's I keep wanting to call it the Yukon. the Amazon area. That was one of his ideas, and they carried on at a great rate when he wanted to do that. So he has considered it from time to time, ordaining women, and he's still listening, and he is far more progressive than many of the U.S. bishops. So I made this bishop up, of course, but there are some like him.
Yeah.
Who carry on like that.
Now, the play, though, in itself, is, again, it has to do with the return to Earth of the famous St. Bridget. Is she somewhat of a goddess in your upcoming play?
Well, there was a goddess Bridget before the saint. In pagan times, there was a goddess, Bridget, and she was the one that the farmers prayed to, and she helped with the land. She was the goddess of women and children, and you know that in pagan times that there were gods and goddesses. There was the god Lu, and he was honored as the sun god in at Lunasa in October, August. And people would climb a mountain to honor him, and now they climb the mountain to honor St. Patrick, as we know. So it's all sort of, so the goddess was there before the saint. And some people thought, well, according to some things I read, that Bridget the Saint was a rebirth of the goddess. But, of course, Bridget the Saint was a real person. She was a real woman, and she existed for sure, and whereas goddesses, well, maybe they do and maybe they don't exist.
Yeah. Well, that needs some kind of a clearance anyway. They're coming in with the stigma as a pagan. But anyway, the goddess Bridget
and St. Bridget, do they hook up?
In my play?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
They work together in the play.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's...
Well...
It has been fun writing it, I have to say.
I would think so, yes. Now, again, we would want to tie this into the fact that this is a very special and significant year. In Ireland, considering that it is now not a once-off, but it's going to be an annual national holiday, and again, the first named after a woman, and it's going to start this year. It's actually going to be on February 1st this year. I know.
Yes. Yes, yeah. This is the first year, right.
Yeah. And that, again, is... it's really something. It's now the 10th bank holiday of the annual allotment of holidays, national holidays in Ireland, and it is good, and it is it's high time, some would say,
absolutely,
and, including myself. And then your play is taking place on the eve of St. Bridget's, so that is going to be, and where is it going to play?
That's going to be at the New York Irish Center at 1040 Jackson Avenue in Long Island City.
Yes.
And that's on the 31st at 7 p.m. And then there's going to be a second reading of the, now this is a reading. They're both readings. The second one is going to be on February 4th at Trinity Chapel down on 9th Street in Tompkins Square Park.
Excellent.
So, yes. So,
having said that it's a reading, you
yes.
also, though, have several characters in it. It's not just...
actors will read. The actors will read, but they will, of course, interact with each other. And this, they're... The singing, of course, by Susan McKeown will be fabulous, as one
yeah.
would expect. So that's all part of it.
Are they original songs that... will we recognize any of the songs?
You might... Gáil Moltar Bridge is in praise of Bridget. That's
yeah.
going to be one of them. And then A Widow Walker is in honor of Mary.
Yes.
It's going to be When They Visit the Pope, that song will come up. And there's an incident, I won't say what it is, but
okay.
there will be a macaronic hymn being sung called Deus Meus. It's
yeah.
Part Irish and part Latin.
Okay.
That's every second line is in Irish and Latin. So
yeah.
that will be also sung by Susan McKeown. It'll yeah. be just... fabulous.
That's going to be a challenge for some of us, but anyway.
you'll be carried away by her voice.
I
yeah.
know. We
yeah.
know her very well indeed, and an excellent yeah. entertainer.
Yes.
So you have, in your cast, you have Catherine O'Sullivan.
Yes, she plays St. Bridget. I have
yes.
Meg Hennessy, who's playing Goddess Bridget.
Yes.
I have
She's the pagan one, right?
She's the pagan one, yes. And
yeah.
I have Tom Molyneux, who is doing the contrary bishop. He
okay.
is, Tom is from the Irish American Writers and Artists.
Yes,
and
indeed.
I have Tom...
Is he practicing being nasty?
I think he is. He said he was, yeah. He's,
yeah, downright
he's
nasty.
Very, he's very good.
Okay.
And Tom Paulino is doing Pope Francis.
Wow. There you are. And then your narrator.
And my narrator, yes, I have an excellent narrator as well, and her name is Ryan Cahill.
All right. So now, information. How do we get more information on this, and how do we get to book ourselves into the New York Irish Center?
Well, you can check with the New York Irish Center itself, or you can go through... the tickets through the theater, the Origin First Irish. Yeah, the tickets.
I have the Origin First Irish.
Yes. Yeah. You can find the website there, or you can just call the New York Irish Center directly. Either way. And for the one on the 4th of February, there is a website to get the tickets, www.evenbright.com.
Evenbright.com,
and it's 494-227-19584. But actually, that's too much to remember for your listeners. They can connect with me if they want.
Now you're talking.
Yeah. And I will send them through Messenger or whatever. They can find me on Facebook, or they can find me just on an email, maura.mulligan@aol.com. That's easy. That's for the second reading. But for the first reading, they go through the New York Irish Center or through Origin First Irish.
Perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, friends, in addition to we've covered some of the contributions that my guest Maura Mulligan has indeed provided through the years, but you also you write articles for the Irish Echo newspaper.
I do sometimes. Yes.
Yeah. And you're the founder of Nulig Naman, which is...
Nulig Naman, New York, yes. We celebrate the four Celtic fire festivals. And Imbolg, which is the Feast of Bridget, is the first one, the beginning of spring in Ireland.
Yes.
And then we celebrate Baltana, which is May 1st. And then Samhain, which is Halloween, and Lunasa, which is in August, 1st of August. So I have this group of people, and they'll be helping me with the play as well, and handing out flyers and so on, the playbill and all of that. So
marvelous. All right. Yes. You know, again, you are and have been, you know, much admired, particularly not just in the New York area, but, you know, you've given readings and talks in New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia, and indeed in several venues in Ireland. Congratulations. Keep up the good work, Maura Mulligan, and we're delighted to have you as a guest on the Flannelly Show today.
Thank you very much, Adrian. Thank you.
More than welcome. And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com, worldwide.